Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. Our guest this week is Carrie Champion of ESPN, a SportsCenter anchor, the host of her own podcast, Be Honest, and the host and interviewer of the Rolling with Champion series. That's a co-production of Uber and Uninterrupted, and that obviously made national news with Carrie Champion's interview while driving LeBron James and Kevin Durant. We had what I thought was a terrific podcast, and the topics include, obviously, that conversation with LeBron James and Kevin Durant and those comments becoming national news, and what happened afterwards with the Fox News host Laura Ingraham commenting on those comments. Talk about Carrie being on First Take and then getting out of First Take and being able to find her voice outside of the moderator position. And she is among the more prominent women of color on sports television, and what that role means to her, given how many young women of color reach out to her. It was a really, really terrific interview. I'm really glad she did it. We've been trying to do this for a long time. So about an hour with Carrie Champion coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, as I promised at the top, we bring in Carrie Champion, the ESPN host, anchor, and reporter. This podcast we've been trying to do for 2 years. Carrie clearly is exceptionally busy. Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
I have been really busy. I've been writing a story for 2 years, and it finally took me that long to get on. No, seriously, it's an honor. I'm such a fan. Thanks for having me.
All right, stop with the hype. All right, the PR.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
All right, let's. Here's where I want to start. As I mentioned at the top, you're rolling with the Champion series that's part of Uber and Uninterrupted. This week, or last week, I should say, made national news, given your interview with LeBron James and Kevin Durant. LeBron spoke pretty candidly, as did Kevin Durant, about Donald Trump. Those comments were then interpreted by Fox News host Laura Ingraham, and that became national news. Before I get your thoughts on that, Carrie, I want to ask, how did this come about? And you can certainly go into how you started in this series, but how do you get Kevin Durant and LeBron James in a car driving around Akron? That conversation has never happened before.
You're right. It's so odd. I got to go back. So the Rolling with the Champion series that lives in a digital platform on Uninterrupted, but it was started with a conversation with a girlfriend of mine named Bozema St. John. She's a CBO of Uber, and she's all like, you know, it would be cool if we could do a series as we rebrand Uber for sports, where you drive athletes around and just talk to them and see what happens. She's like, we should partner with, and we just had a couple of people we pitched out, and she's like, this would be a great idea. And it really was something we honestly talked about in a car dealership, and then it came to life. So we've done several of these, right? We did one with Lonzo and Kyle Kuzma. We did one with Paul Pierce, one with DeAndre Jordan. But as you know, Uber is partnered with Uninterrupted, which is Maverick Carter and LeBron James's media outlet. And we had been saying to Maverick, you know, what's the feasibility of getting LeBron James, you know, in the car? And we kicked around a few ideas of when he could do it. One day they called. Not even one day. It probably was the week. Within 4 days, they go, hey, LeBron can do it when they play Golden State. And that is basically the last time he and KD will play each other in the regular season. So we have them both there. Why not get Kevin Durant? And everyone thought, I was like, that's great. That's epic. Let's do it. What are they talking about? Why do they want to do it? And initially, it was the idea of maybe doing something for Black History Month. They weren't really sure. There were a lot of different ideas being kicked around. And it turns out that the reason why KD was in on it was because he really wanted to talk about, you know, his involvement in his community, what he's been doing, his activism, his thoughts on social injustice. And he really wanted to be a part of that conversation, and he has been honest about the fact that he wasn't ready to talk about it till now, till he started to realize what was going on in the world and have a better understanding. And he said, this would be great. I want to do it. I'll do it with LeBron. And to be honest with you, they aren't best friends. Before this even started, we were in the warehouse. It was negative in Akron. And we were waiting for both of them to come. LeBron came a little later. KD got there early. We're just sitting around, just, you know, chatting, very casual conversation. So we all get in this car. And Richard, you could imagine, I'm nervous as hell because let me have an accident. I can only imagine.
Right.
Yeah. Like, hey, somebody's injured. Carrie's ruined the NBA. So we get in the car. I hear them as we're getting situated, getting mic'd up, the whole nine. I hear LeBron turn to KD and go, so where do you live? Up north. Oh, he goes, you know, I live in the near the Bay. You know, he's explaining where he lives. He's like, you like it? Like, they're having conversation. Like, they don't talk on the phone, which I imagine. Like, they're not best friends. Like, they are just friendly. But he's getting to know him as he's in the back seat in a very off-the-court way, which I thought was fascinating. That said a lot to me. I was like, okay, they don't chat. They're not texting. They're not those kind of friends. That was my interpretation.
Hmm. So let's just talk about a couple of logistics here. Anyone else in the car with you, or is it just some kind of still camera that's focused on them when they're talking, or remote camera or something like that?
It's just us. It's okay. Remote cameras and us. And just remote cameras and us. However, there's cars all around, as you well know. There's
right.
A car in the front filming, a car on the side filming, a car in the back filming, but it's just us three.
How long was the drive?
About an hour and some change, for obvious reasons. We had to stop down, make sure the mic was right. We were in the snow. We had to fix, you know, a camera sometimes. But we drove for about an hour and some change, yeah.
Carrie, one of the things that's not easy, and I'm sure you had to just sort of figure out, is it's not particularly easy to interview somebody and drive at the same time, not to mention the fact that, and you're funny at the start of this, like, I don't want to crash because, like, if that happens, I'm making news from Akron to China. So,
yeah, exactly.
So when you were approaching this, and just in terms of like your thought process, all right, how do I get these guys in a conversation? What am I going to ask? How'd you prep for that? How'd you prep for the sort of the duality of I got to drive, but at the same time, I got to lead the conversation a certain way?
We had uninterrupted an Uber. We had several phone calls. Like two nights before when we knew it was confirmed, Maverick, Bozema, and I were all on the phone, very, very honest with each other about what we wanted to do. And it wasn't, everybody didn't see eye to eye, you know, and everyone had different idea of what they thought the concept should be. And I just said, you know, I believe, just let them talk. That's been the only thing I've ever noticed that comes out right. Let them talk, and then we go from there. Let's see what happens. I said, there are like four things we wanted to hit. We wanted to hit All-Star, obviously, because we knew it would air during All-Star. They specifically were like, let's make sure we talk about who they are. And if we want them to be real candid, it's about who they've become. And that was a request from KD. Like, I'll talk about basketball all day and what it means, and I'm a champion, but I really, truly want to talk about who I've become. So they really got in the car ready to talk, Richard. Now, we had a list of ideas where we would go and what trajectory we would go in. So I have a producer in my ear. If we didn't hit certain questions, he'd be like, here, you forgot to ask this question. Because we just came up with a list of questions that we thought. One would be culture. One would be society. What would be influence? And then it would be basketball. We ended with All-Star Weekend. But all the while, LeBron is taking us to these different spots, right? So when he's taking us to his old neighborhood, obviously that means something to him.
Right.
And he's explaining how that helped him become a better man. That's what he learned. He was a kid. So then he talks about his neighborhood. Then KD's like, my neighborhood, this is what happened with me and how I grew up and how things have changed me and how I'm the hope on the block. But before, people envied me. So every spot had a significance for LeBron that KD also chimed in on and weighed in on in terms of where he grew up and how he lived and where he first fell in love with basketball.
Before I get to some of the things that they said, how did you approach ESPN with this? Because obviously this is not for while ESPN obviously could, if there's something newsworthy, they can pick it up. Yeah, this is a project away from ESPN. Did you have to get permission from them to do this?
For Rolling with the Champion, yes. Skipper greenlit it.
Okay.
He's no longer there. He gave me the green light, if you will. And he said, do it. I think it's amazing. I think it sounds fun. To be honest with you, I said, listen, it's a first, Skipper knew that it was a commercial. I don't necessarily know if they knew that it was a show that lived on Uninterrupted. I explained that to them, but I don't think they understood the concept of that. But Skipper thought it was great. He thought it was nice that we had this opportunity to do a commercial, make some national headlines, and then, not headlines, but have some national publicity, and then have this, and he was a huge fan of Maverick. So he thought that was very creative what they were doing over there. They had their own rapport. Maverick Carter and Skipper. So it wasn't that difficult to get it cleared. Hmm. I think they didn't have an idea of what it really would translate to be.
Right. That's interesting, though. It's good. It's smart on the former president there to let his talent do outside stuff, because that usually makes for happier employees. Okay. So you're in the car, and you're obviously going to get into questions about Donald Trump, questions yeah. about being a high-profile African-American athlete in the country. When LeBron James starts to talk about the president of the United States, are you immediately aware in your mind at the potential impact of those comments, or are you just in the moment interviewing and driving that you don't recognize that until maybe you see the footage after the fact?
No, I knew right away that what he was saying would be received in the way that it has been received. I knew that there would be people who, in large part, are thinking, wow, LeBron has found his voice, and he's very clear, and he's not he's unapologetic about how he feels, and he's using his platform in a very powerful way. And I knew there were people who would be upset about what he said. But quite frankly, LeBron is very much, I don't care. He is living his life as if this isn't the time. I have to say something. I have to say what I feel, because I know there are people who feel the way I do who can't speak out. So when he's, and I made a joke, I don't know if I even said it, you know, in the series, that I said, it's a sermon. Like he literally was preaching, because you had to tell him, all right, so let me stop down. Let me get KD's take. Cause he was really emotional. And I don't know if that's the right word. He was very passionate. That's the word, about how he feels, his place in this world should be, that he should speak out. And he was very passionate about what he had to say. And he's grown to that, though, Richard. You know that. Like, he's had some misses and some wins, but he's grown to this point, and he's very comfortable with his voice.
And then you, during the midst of that conversation, brought up how there's an incorrect perception that people believe once a black guy has money, in LeBron's case, there's not that means it's the end of racism, whether
sure.
overt and subtle. And then that led LeBron to discuss what he said happened to him in California, where the N-word was sprayed on his property.
Yeah.
I want to get your thoughts when LeBron is talking about that, because there still to this day are people who are claiming that that didn't happen, LeBron made it up, which seems just inconceivable. Why on earth would LeBron James make this up? There's
yeah.
no motivation for that. He doesn't need the publicity. He doesn't need the attention or anything else. But that to me was when he really, I thought, in the interview, went to a different place, in that he basically said to the effect that, you know, no matter how much money, how much access, how famous I get, you always understand in America.
You're
a black man in America. How did you, when you were hearing that, what was your interpretation? Because I thought that was pretty profound what he was saying.
Oh, but see, that I already know. That's like telling me water is wet. So LeBron's saying something that every black male athlete will have to come to terms with eventually. You have to understand that at one point in time in your life, you're going to realize that you're just a black man in someone's eyes. And he used the N-word in a very powerful way, because what he was trying to say is that there will be a time when you realize someone just doesn't think that you matter, and they'll let you know that despite the fact that you are rich and you have a talent and that you can have all the access in the world. So one, he has no reason to lie. Who wants that unwanted attention?
Right.
That to me is it. To me, that would be the most disgusting thing someone could ever do. And he has no reason to lie about that. That is the truth, in my opinion. So as far as when he was saying that, Richard, quite frankly, I was glad he was saying it, because I was like, finally, now we're hearing it. There are those who have wanted to say it. KD said it in a very different way in an article. He was interviewed up north. I forget the name of the paper, but he said when he made that transition to Golden State, he was realizing a lot of different things. What happens is that when you are black and you can play a sport, you're often sheltered and treated differently, and different people come in your lives at a very young age. You know this. And then so you're just special. you're the special one. You get picked up, you get treated differently. You have AAU coaches that do different things for you. So he's been special all of his life, right? And this is what KD is saying. I've been special. I've been special in college. The time that I spent, I was special in high school, and I've been special. But now I realize that I'm not special, especially being in Golden State. He was like, That's the center of political activity. That team always is at the forefront. They're always forward-thinking with their coach, who always has something to say about the political climate or the world we live in. The players on the team as well. So Kevin Durant is coming into his own now, too, and realizing, yeah, okay, everything LeBron just said, I'm just now realizing that. So in that moment, I could hear KD shaking his head, you know, in agreement, but also realization. And just thinking, that's just what it is. Like, at this moment, that's what it is. And it will always be that way.
All right. I want to then get to, so you have this interview in the bank. You know it's going to draw a lot of attention just because of it's the two of the most famous athletes on the planet. And so it goes into another level when Fox News host Laura Ingraham basically does a two-minute I don't know if maybe rant's not the right word, but two-minute commentary, basically calling LeBron James out, saying he's barely intelligible, saying to shut up and dribble. Again, I've already sort of put this out there so people know how I feel about this. It was absolutely dog whistling on Laura Ingraham's part. You can pretend it wasn't, but that's what it was. When you saw her comments, Carrie, and you saw this story becoming now a major, major story crossing into the political arena, what were your initial thoughts, and what are your thoughts now?
I was furious. I was angry. I was pissed off. I was all the things that everybody else was that watched that and thought what it was, dog whistle. I thought she, and you're being kind by saying that, I thought she essentially said shut up. She essentially, to me, was saying shut up in words. Like, I really didn't like how it came across. It hit my spirit really, really hard because that's exactly what LeBron was talking about, the entire car ride. That's exactly what KD was talking about, the entire car ride. There were some things that we weren't able, obviously it was an hour, there's some things we couldn't put into the ride. We did 60 minutes and we thought people wouldn't even watch that. But at one point LeBron said, as black athletes, always are treated more harshly, not even just in terms of the N-word being spray painted on his wall. He's like, just in general, like, we can't have an opinion, we can't say anything. He said they just treat it differently, and I don't know why that is. And he said it's so unfair. And he's like, and I have to, and I'm listening to LeBron say this, and I'm thinking, no, you're loved by everybody, what are you talking about? But she's actually proven the point. Now, I know she went back and said that she said shut up and sing and shut up and act and so on and so forth, but there is something completely different than saying shut up and dribble or shut up and play basketball, shut up and be an athlete. Like, she could have said that and maybe that wouldn't have hit as harsh. Shut up and be an athlete. But she started off with saying that, you know, he couldn't speak well, ungrammatical.
Yep.
What kind of nonsense is that? And listen, let me be honest with you, Richard. They're all aware of the fact that they may not be, like, some people, they know that people view them as not eloquent. They know that. So for her to say that and reinforce whatever the stereotype is about certain athletes, okay, that's this disgusting in itself. But then this shut up and dribble. And what really, really bothered me is when she stopped down and said, why must they?
Correct. The word, they, I mean, listen, you're right. I am being polite. Her statement was racist. And that sentence is where it's that. Why must they? And
who the hell is they?
Correct.
That's what I sat there. I'm not kidding. I was angry. And then by anger, I mean, like, damn near tears in my eyes because it's so disgusting. And it's so bold. And Dwayne Wade said it best. They're really not hiding anymore. They, whatever they is. Like, you're bold. So I'll give her that word, and I call her a they. Like, you're really not hiding anymore. You're really saying exactly how you feel. And that's disgusting. So when she was like, why must they? Everyone's focused on shut up and dribble. Okay, yeah, that's fine. But why must they run their mouth like that?
Right.
Who's referring to?
Yeah, the specific quote, must they run their mouths like that? And that is
that's what bothered me.
Yep,
they was to me the N word.
Yep. Last one on this, Carrie. Did you or have you since this came out, spoken to either LeBron, Kevin Durant, or in LeBron's case, his management about everything that went down?
Yes, of course. What? It was All-Star Weekend, as you know.
Right.
I was at a dinner, and Kevin Durant was there, and he walked up to me. He said, "Did you hear what old girl said about us?" And I said, "I did. I did." And he was like, "Man," like he just was shaking his head. And it wasn't, he was just, but I felt like he, this is what I interpreted from our conversation, that this has motivated him more to use his platform to speak out about what he thought was wrong. Not so much focusing on her and not giving her that much attention, because she doesn't deserve any attention, because she's clearly a dummy. And anybody who talks like that is a dummy. So what we're saying is that you can put this on Fox News and you can race bait, if you will, or whatever it is they accuse us of doing. She's doing all of that, and that's fine. But I realized that they were so above it all. I bumped into LeBron the next day. Again, same thought. He dismissed. Like, he was really dismissive of who she was and the whole situation. He wasn't giving it any attention, but it just also reminds him that what he's doing needs to be done. And the same thing for KD. They were just like, "Wow, okay, that's what it is." Like, that was like, "Oh, it's like that? Gotcha. I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to keep talking about social injustice. I'm going to keep making sure that I use my platform for good and highlighting what needs to be done while everybody else wants to be divisive." So I was really, really impressed with their response, which was basically, "She doesn't matter."
You know, it's that time again. That familiar crossroads of choosing between basketball and hockey. You can't choose. They're both on. Why are they both on? Relax. We have a solution. Buffalo Wild Wings. I will say, Buffalo is a fantastic city. I lived there for 7 years. It's so underrated. Rather than fill your living room with televisions, come into B-Dubs. We've got hockey and basketball on, each playing on dozens of screens so that you don't have to choose. And to complete the trifecta, we can ensure you have access to all the sports foods you crave, from our selection of America's favorite wings in any of our 21 signature sauces and seasonings to shareable favorites like cheddar cheese curds and fried pickles. You'll have everything you've ever wanted. But wait, we also have a variety of beers to quench your thirst. All the basketball, all the hockey, all the food, and all the beer you want. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings Beer Sports. Please drink responsibly. Carrie, I appreciate you going into that. I'm going to take a pretty dramatic segue here to sort of talk about what you're doing at ESPN and some other ESPN-related questions. You're doing SportsCenter, obviously. You have your own podcast, which I know you love because that gives you sort of a chance to shape things. Shape things the way you want. The interesting thing about SportsCenter, Carrie, is that we've seen a change even in the last 16 months. There was the push for individual sports centers to push sort of people's personalities. We saw that with Jemele Hill and Michael Smith. See that with Scott Van Pelt. The Hill Smith Sports Center, as you know well, and we'll get to Jemele eventually, has now shifted, and it's just Michael Smith. Where do you see Sports Center going heading forward, and where do you see your role in it, if indeed that's what you want to do heading forward?
Well, Sports Center for me will be coming to an end sooner than later.
Okay.
March 2nd is my last day on SportsCenter. I will be hosting Sports Nation. And I've had, to be honest with you, under the time that I was at SportsCenter, during the time I was at SportsCenter, Rob King primarily was over SportsCenter. So he was very generous with in terms of my creativity and what I wanted to do, because he knows that I work in the LA office and that I kind of work better by myself. Just leave me be. I'll get it done because I'm just the hard worker, if I say so myself. So I'll just get it done, leave me alone. So it was better for me to be here because I was able to thrive. I was able to kind of do my own thing and create, work with some really good creative people. Like, our team was really creative. But when they said that Coast to Coast, they announced this a while ago, was going away, which is the show that I do, was going away for this new lineup, I was bummed. I was really disappointed because I've never had the opportunity in my entire career, whether it be in sports or just regular journalism, when I was the local news anchor, had the opportunity to work with somebody like David Lloyd. The man is so generous and so kind and so and it's not real. His heart is just pure. I'm like, well, what are you doing in TV, sir? you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing? So he's a great man. And it was no ego for either of us. We were both very generous on air and off air in terms of what we wanted. And he made sure when I first got on that show that I was included. Because what happens is when you are, and you know that world, a woman being an anchor on SportsCenter, and I'm paired with David Lloyd, who's been there for, you know, 20 years, immediately there was, without whether it was intentional or not intentional, they started to defer to him. And David was very like, no. But Carrie, what's your thought? You know, he set the tone early on. Carrie, what do you think? Let's ask Carrie what her opinion is. So for me, that was like, okay, wow. My male colleague saying to me, Carrie, that's great. And two, what's your opinion? So that's why I said I'm going to miss it, because he was very generous, and we had a really, really good team. But SportsCenter is changing, and they're changing their – and it may change again, by the way, like, because that's just what happens. And they go through this a few times. David and I were talking about it. He says, I've been here 20 years. It changes every so often. So now it's, to me, going back to a different – more highlights, more video, not that much personality, not that much talk. We have a show that does talk. Let's make that show talk. No more of that on SportsCenter. Let's bring people on and show video and have analysts. So going back to what we used to do. And that's fine. That's fine, too, because, you know, everyone has their own likes and dislikes. For me, I preferred it, obviously, when it was more personality-driven, because it gave me that platform to work with David Lloyd.
Carrie, do you have any idea as to how you want to make Sports Nation, what you want to bring to Sports Nation and sort of make it your own style? They obviously had Michelle Beadle on that show before she moved to New York to be part of the new Greenberg show, and obviously she's doing the NBA. That show has changed, obviously, personnel. But it's an LA-based show, which means you can get a lot of interesting people to come in. And it's kind of a unique show in the ESPN universe. There's not really another show like it. So how are you going to approach it?
We've been working on that now, actually. So I think that it'll be a lot personality-driven. A lot of it has to do with, and Marcellus will be on the show with NLV, a lot of it has to do with our chemistry. I think that we'll just have to develop our own chemistry. They clearly had a way with Michelle, and so they'll have to we'll develop a chemistry together. But I think the show for me would have to be about things I enjoy as well. Like some stuff I don't get. Like, if I'm honest, I was telling one of the producers, I was like, I don't get that. How's that work? Tell me why we do, you know. And she goes, well, okay, we don't necessarily have to do it that way, but here are some things that are hallmarks to the show that we can either do away with or we can expand and make it different. So we are actually in the process of doing that right now. We have rehearsals. We've been trying to sit down and figure out what works, certain segments, certain spots. I think initially it's 30 minutes, right? So it's going to move fast. I thought it would be nice to have, they have guests, but I would like to have maybe one, and not necessarily celebrity, but one unique guest a week, you know, if we can't have it every single day. But I would like one really unique person a week. And that could be someone you could not even think of. It could be a colleague. It could be Jemele Hill. It could be a writer. Just someone you just traditionally wouldn't see in the past on that show. Because for me, that helps the show evolve. It gives it a different conversation. And so that's what I'm looking forward to, like putting that kind of just little tweaks on it. It's already great.
I want to ask you about your role on First Take. And you mm-hmm. were a very good sport with me, because I probably referenced you and Shawshank Redemption. I mean, I would say conservatively 300 tweets. That's probably
conservatively, Richard.
Yeah, that's probably conservatively. I needed you as part of my larger message, so I appreciate your kindness there. But one of the things, and I was very serious about this, and I still maintain this to this day, because the setup is the same. You have since First Take been able to get these platforms where you can talk. You can interview, you can address you can have your own commentary. At First Take, even as successful as it was, you were a moderator between Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. You functioned as somebody who brought the show in, brought the show out, and sometimes maybe would add something. Everybody already knows how I feel about that show, and certainly Bayless. I don't want to get into that with you. But I do want to ask you, how did you deal with what had to be just some kind of professional frustration about not being able to get your voice out there when, as we've seen in the last 3 years, you clearly have a voice.
You know, that was difficult. I called it the middle seat, right? I wrote a story about it when I was leaving First Take and I was going to SportsCenter. It was the middle seat, so that's the most uncomfortable seat on the plane normally, depending on who you're sitting next to. No one really wants the middle seat. You can't quite get in. You can't feel comfortable. Your legs are long. For me, my legs are long. I can't cross my legs. I can't lean to the left. If I want to take a nap, I don't want to lean on this person's shoulder. So that was, to me, visually how I felt about being on that show. I couldn't quite get in there. I wasn't comfortable. It was Stephen A. and Skip had their own chemistry, a very unique chemistry. And for so many years, I thought to myself, they didn't really need a moderator. You know, I felt like that position, they didn't need it. They could have, you know, a voice of God come out of nowhere and they could just go. And so it was very frustrating because I was an outsider. So Richard, I got the job. Jamie Horowitz hired me, but he hired me from the Tennis Channel, and no one knew who I was or where I came from or even my background or my acumen. But I was a local news reporter. I had been working for some time when I got the job, and I had been at Tennis Channel for about maybe 2.5 years, 3 years, I'm not for sure. So I was an outsider, if you will, because if people haven't heard of you, they're like, well, who is this person and why is she on the show? So I think that worked against me, and people didn't really understand, you know, my value or what I offered or what I could do. And I was frustrated. There were many times I was frustrated. Let me tell you, like, if you could call Jamal, there's a time, we have this funny story. We call it the time where I may or may not have went to her house, and in my backpack was some champagne, and I was celebrating me leaving without anybody knowing I was leaving. I was ready to jump.
Right.
I was like, I'm frustrated. I'm out of here. And obviously, she talked me off the ledge because it was frustrating. But I tell you, and I tried to share those frustrations. But the problem is, when something is done the way something is done, it's hard to change it. It's hard to go back to something that and say, how about this? Insert this person and make it new. That show had, in my opinion, already had a flow. And Skip and Stephen A. the show grows. And Richard, I know how you felt about it. But the show is the most popular show. Like, it was the fanfare, the on the road. Like, and so you can't, like, how do you go to somebody and say, change this? Even if it's right, how do you change all of this, please? This isn't what this person wants. And so it wasn't happening. And I had a hard time. I just did. It was very difficult. And I think they both knew that. I think Skip and Stephen, they knew that, and they understood it. And when I was begging, if you will, to, you know, saying, hey, guys, I'm knocking on doors. I was literally asking to do different things around ESPN. I was like, what do you need me to do? I can be a bureau reporter. I was just going to different people's offices. You know, I'd make my rounds. I would literally just ask people, what else can I do? What else can I do? And they'd be like, okay. And this is, you know what it is. It's hard work, Richard. So I get this break where a friend of mine gives me an interview, and it changes everything. And so people are like, oh, okay. You know, you just need that one yes to have everyone's mind change that, oh, actually, this person can do this or this person can do that. And that's what happened with me. And then after that, it was, you know, I was off to the races. I literally had put a plan together. I the show, fine, great. You guys are amazing. And people were telling me, Richard, when I was leaving, they were like, and not people within ESPN, but my friends, and they were like, oh my God, you're leaving that popular show. Why are you going to SportsCenter? The show's so popular. Why are you leaving it? And I was like, because I want to do something different that allows me to be the journalist that I am, to express myself. And so no one could understand it. I just remember, like, even some folks who were on the show, they were just looking at me like, are you sure about this? Like, eyes were big. I can't believe you're leaving. I absolutely can. So, you know, it worked out for me, but it wasn't creatively. It wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I wanted to do.
One last one on this, Carrie. It's less about First Take and more about sort of how these shows are set up. But do you think we will ever see the day when the paradigm shifts and it's not male on the left, male on the right, woman in the middle who moderates? FS1 does the same exact thing with their First Take type of shows, and we see that all over the place. As a general rule, as absurd as it is in 2018, rarely is it. I mean, could you imagine ever seeing two women on the left and the right, and a man in the middle moderate?
Great.
Like, it just doesn't happen. So I wonder, as someone who's been in this business for a while now. And males are the ones making the hires and the decisions, generally speaking. But do you see a day when that changes, or is the same what I would call just tired paradigm of guy on the left, dude on the right, woman in the middle, and woman in the middle moderates, occasionally says something, but generally speaking is the person who brings the show in and out.
The larger issue is what you just hit on. You know, usually it's the male that's hiring, right? So if we were, and I have this conversation often with a lot of my female colleagues, if we as women were more in the C-suite or in these executive positions and much more open and willing to lean on the fact that they are women, we'd see that. I find that in any of these spaces, when a woman becomes, you know, an executive and has, you know, managerial power to make decisions, she usually leans in with the boys, meaning like she doesn't suggest, you know, it would be great if we have two women doing that, because I feel that because there's so few women that are running our bosses in sports, that I feel that they feel like their voices won't be heard. I feel that they're dealing with the same things that we're dealing with. And until that changes, I can't see the paradigm. I can't see the model changing. So until I see a woman with power who is unapologetic about being a woman and putting and having an agenda of putting women in power positions in sports, then I don't see it changing. Because here's the deal. If it's just me, and I'm not referring to me. Me, say if my name is Tina, I'm making up something. Tina, and I'm a boss in sports, and I go into this room, and there's 10 men in the room, and, you know, a couple of us sprinkled here and there, but we can't really have the title, but we don't really have the power. Tina doesn't feel comfortable to speak up and say, you know, it'd be great if we had a show where two women were the debaters, and whoever is the moderator would be great. Maybe it's a guy, maybe it's not, but two women would be the debaters, and not put the show on a format or a platform that is like digital. You know, put it on E1. At 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, let's go all in on it. Let's make this our headliner. Because, by the way, ESPN, out of, say what you want, is very progressive in giving women positions.
Definitely.
And making sure that they are heard and our voices are heard. ESPN, I think, leads the way in that. However, like, I would like to see more of, you know what, let me put you right here at E1, you know, at 7 a.m., you know, or whatever the prime time spot is, you know what I'm saying? Give it to them. And it's hard. I think we're getting there, but it's also cultivating those voices. You know, how many, I know that they are really trying to do that, but we're not there yet. And I don't want to say never, because I never thought we'd have a black president. So it could happen.
Before we move on, let me tell you about Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's neighborhood mattress store. It's a true home run. Mattress Firm are the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast, mattressfirm.com/podcast. Now to see what deals are happening, they even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. A couple more things here, Carrie, a couple more topics that I want to get to before we get you out of here. You are one of Jemele Hill's closest friends. And I realize you got to be a little diplomatic here just because you're working for this company and paid by this company. But from your from your perspective, why did things not work out long term for her at SportsCenter?
I think that I call it the miscast, right? Some people just get put in positions where they really aren't necessarily doing what they do best. I think what Jemele does best is give an opinion. And I think that if you wanted her not to do that, or if you wanted her to do something else, or you expected something else, then it wasn't going to work. Because that's just who she is in general. She's very easy. You know that. She's like, yeah, sure, whatever, no problem. But, you know, sometimes being a host or being an anchor is totally different than being a person who gives an opinion, an analyst, a writer. And I think that she started to realize that as she started to do the show, right? So that's one thing. So she wanted to come on, her and Michael wanted to come on and have an opinion and do what they do best and talk and banter. But I think it was never really fleshed out. I think at the very beginning, they really didn't have, whoever they may be, didn't really have a plan on what they wanted the show to be. So in my opinion, that's why it didn't work out. I think that if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a vision, then you're like, well, what is this? Well, what are we doing? Or what are we doing every day? And I also believe, quite frankly, and let's just keep it real funky, this is one of the major reasons, is that it was hard. It was, an executive told me, and he shall remain nameless, he said he couldn't believe in this day and age that they would receive so much racist feedback
right.
about two black people sitting there hosting. He was, and this comes from a white male executive, he was like, I was shocked at the response to Jemele and Michael. And so they didn't have a fair shot coming out the gate, right? So they couldn't win the race if people were already pushing back on that. And Richard, we don't have to, you know, Twitter's disgusting, and you know that, right? So, and that's not, and that is not indicative of the entire world. But once that started to get into their spirit, I think that was another thing. But people had a hard time digesting two black people sitting there telling sports in this day and age, in that time slot. Like, why is that? I don't know. You tell me.
How did you,
I mean, go on.
I didn't interrupt. I was going to say, but you, again, because you're really close to Jemele, can you give a sense of what kind of backlash has existed for her online and elsewhere since her comments about Donald Trump?
Oh, please. It's crazy. First of all, I call her suffer in silence. It's funny, but it's not funny, because she could be dealing with so many different issues because of that and never tell you. And she's like, oh, by the way, I didn't tell you this. So-and-so said this, or so-and-so threatened this, or whatever the case may be. She's handled it very well. During that entire time, I think that she handled it extremely well. She didn't lose it in terms of her mental capacity to just stay focused and not let the noise really bring her down. But in terms of the type of backlash, I mean, I haven't seen it overtly, but I mean, I'm sure it's hurting her in ways that we don't know professionally. I know that she just wanted to be peaceful, and she didn't want to deal with the drama anymore because that's not how she functions. So that's why I know that was one of the reasons why she was like, I can't just be at peace if I continue to do the show. I think when we're out and about and we're walking down the street and she's a hero, people walk up to her. They're like, we're with you, Jemele. We love you. I haven't seen anybody say they're not fans of Jemele since that incident. However, this is a side note. When we did do that piece in Alabama, Richard, Dear Black Athlete,
right.
She did tell me that some people came up to her and said, despite what you did, we still love you. So in that particular, in Alabama, it was interesting. She said, that was like people walking up to her. They were like, some people around here may not like you, but we like you. Hmm. Like, those are the compliments they were giving her. So, I mean, it is what it is. Maybe, perhaps, it was more so among that small minority along racial lines. They didn't want to, you know, embrace Jemele. But she hasn't received, her in terms of backlash, she has been very supported. I feel like she can walk around anywhere and people say, we love you, we appreciate you, keep doing what you're doing. I haven't seen anybody really come at her hard, but professionally, I think she'll have to pay a price.
The one last thing about Jemele that I want to sort of ask you directly on is, I reported this out prior to Jemele Hill making a statement. I have the SportsCenter executive, Norby Williamson, on the record saying that Jemele asked off the show was her decision. Jemele Hill says it. Michael Smith says it. There are other people at ESPN who've said it. But yet there is still this perception out there that SportsCenter fired Jemele. I'm sorry, ESPN fired Jemele Hill.
Right.
I want to just ask you directly, from what you know as one of her closest friends, was Jemele Hill the person who asked off the show, or did ESPN push her off the show?
No, she asked off the show. Jemele had started the plan to leave that show quite some time ago. But by November, she was like, okay, so this is what I need to do because I don't have any peace. She had her plan already. She walked in with the plan. It wasn't that she ended up on Undefeated because they said, let's place her there. That was her choice. Let me go to Undefeated. Let me write. Let me do different pieces. Let me go a la carte. Here are the packages. She came up with a whole plan for herself. She was like, she wanted out. Like, I love that everyone thinks she got fired or pushed out, and they'll say it And I know on the outside looking in, it looks that way. But she is such, and this is the difference between her and so many other people on TV. She doesn't have to be on TV every day. Like, people get caught up in the fame thing, Richard, and being on TV every day, and they think that's all that matters. But she is, that's not her deal.
Correct.
She wants to be smart. She wants to be thoughtful. She wants to do pieces that matter. She don't have to be on TV to do that every day, Richard. And she knows that. And so the problem, unlike so many of us, maybe even myself included, you think being on TV every day matters. It just doesn't at the end of the day. And she's like, I'm good. I don't need to be on TV every day. I'm not into this fame thing. I'd rather have my peace and do things that matter. Now, it's so hard for people to imagine that concept. In this day and age, nobody wants the television, or people don't believe that. What I'm trying to say is people don't believe that her ego isn't involved in this process, and it just isn't. Like, it's unheard of. Who's getting up 6 o'clock SportsCenter to go write? It's unheard of. But that's just who she is. At the end of the day, she'd rather have peace than deal with than anything else than deal with that drama.
Right. And the contract, by the way, the checks are still cashing. So
She has all her money. She's good.
Right.
She's actually, she's out here right now living her best life.
Nice.
Still doing work. So yeah, it's good.
All right. Final three here. I want to, your grandmother was one of the big people who had a massive impact on your life. She was a diehard Laker fan. Is this where your love of basketball comes from?
Yes. My grandmother used to take me to the Fabulous Forum on the bus. She doesn't drive, so we would take, at the time it was called the RTD, we would take the RTD to the Fabulous Forum to watch the Lakers play, and she'd explain the game to me. And at that time, you know, as I was growing up as a kid, it was Showtime, and they were very popular. So that was her life, and if you didn't love the Lakers, you basically weren't going to get anything to eat. So that's how it went down.
Did she have a favorite Laker?
Magic. Yes, and I introduced her to Magic. I let them talk on the phone.
Wow.
It was crazy. That was the best gift I could ever give that woman. I introduced her to Magic. They talked on the phone about three Christmases ago, and the first thing she said to him was like, do you remember that hug I gave you back in 19? Like, she made up, I don't even know what the date was. And Magic was like, no, I don't remember that, but it was, I was like, Grandma, why are you flirting with Magic? This is uncomfortable. I just wanted you to say hi.
Nice.
What are you doing?
Nice give back. She's probably, is your grandma now in her, she must be in her 80s. I'm just taking a guess.
Yeah, she's 88. She just had a birthday.
Wow.
Yep.
88?
She's had a birthday. She's 80. She's up here moving. Richard, she's spicy. Got a lot of attitude. Really, really smart. And she flirts a lot. I get it all from her.
Man, imagine LeBron goes to the Lakers. It's going to be a nice run for your grandma.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. and by the way, that's something I've never asked him. I but that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We'll see how that's going to play out. In doing a little bit of research, I did reach out to Jemele Hill because she is obviously one of your closest friends. And I said, you know, is there something like that most people don't know about Carrie that I should ask her about because she's coming on this podcast? And she said, ask her about her relationship with Tupac. So I'm just going to leave it there. What's the story there?
Funny. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Dating myself. So when I was graduating high school, I was 18 years old. I'm pretty sure I just turned 18. I want to stay legal for the story. So I had some girlfriends who were in college, and they were hanging out one night. I don't know. We were at a place, hanging out like at some local diner, and you know, I have fake ID, and I was somewhere just hanging out with the girls, trying to be an older adult, as you do when you're 18, mischievous. And in comes, in this restaurant, in comes Tupac, right? Tupac walks into this restaurant, and it's just like a little, you know, diner spot where kids are hanging out. This is back in the day where he could walk in. He wasn't going to be, it wasn't paparazzi. You could easily do that. And he was having some type of party that weekend. All of us would hear about it. Like, the buzz on the street was he was having a party of some sort. Because I'm always the bold one and I don't care. I was like, hi, I hear you're having a party this weekend. Can you tell us where it's at? I just walked right up to him and said it. Now, he wasn't Tupac of who he is now. He was Tupac, but he wasn't like Tupac. So I wasn't afraid to walk up to him. Richard, true story. He said, I don't know where the party is, but if you give me your number, I'll call you and tell you where it is. And I was like, okay, no biggie. Ha ha ha. And again, dating myself, there were pagers at the time, so he took my pager number. So I was sitting at my girlfriend's house, you know, the next day, I get a page with 3-2s behind it because it was his code, and he literally says in the most simplest way, he's like, hey, the party is here. You guys should come and hang out. No big deal. Now, mind you, the story's not going to end very exciting. And so he ended up actually coming to hang out with us girls, and we were so excited. We were trying to pretend like it was no big deal. And we sat around talking to Tupac all day, not all day, let me give you about an hour, talking about the creative process, how he writes, what he thinks, how smart he is, why do all rappers, not all rappers, like certain medicinal outlets, you know, that kind of thing. And so that was it. It was just a crazy story. Jamel thinks it's funny that I sat with Tupac and chatted with him for about an hour, but that was not, to me, at the time, living in L.A., that's not outrageous. To her, being from Detroit, that's an outrageous story. Not a big deal in Los Angeles, because you bump into stars all the time.
I just like the fact that you had Tupac before he became Tupac with a capital T. That's kind of interesting.
It was so, it's a legit great story. I understand it now in terms of, okay, Tupac, but at the time it was like, maybe he was with Digital Underground. No, he wasn't Tupac. He wasn't Poetic Justice Tupac, I don't think. So it wasn't a big deal to me, Richard. As you, Jamel will tell you this, I don't get excited over stars. I get excited if I met Oprah. That's who I'm getting excited over. That's the only way.
Lou, did you want to say something?
I actually did, because as somebody who grew up in Queens with a pager and a beeper, we all had codes. So it was either our hockey number, our basketball number. So like I was 91 because that was the hockey number I wore. My best friend's number was 12. So we would just type in the phone number. So if it was a phone number you didn't know, you'd hit star or pound 12. So they would know, oh, that's Lou calling me from a number, or Tim calling me from a number. And I was just going to ask you, Carrie, what was Pac's code? And it's 3-2s, which I find to be, of course, that's what it was.
Interesting.
Yeah, right, 3-2s. Well, here's so funny. It's so funny. I don't even remember how detailed you are. I don't remember how to put in a code, but it was 3-2s. And my girlfriend actually called the number back and said, you know, did someone page Carrie? And then she handed me the phone kind of giggling and was like, yeah, it's Tupac. And I was like, and I get on the phone. And I'm like, no, it is. Hi, like I'm talking to him, but I'm pointing at the phone like, oh, no, hi, it is. Well, this is serious. This is not a fake phone call. It's a legit phone call. So you're right. His was 3-2s. And it was a cool experience. Like I say it like no big deal, but every time I tell the story, someone's like, wow, that's great.
If we had production values on this podcast, Lou, we'd drop some Tupac in here and maybe some Christmas time in Hollis, Queens, just as a shout out to you, Lou.
Oh, my Run DMC days, of course. Exactly. Yes.
Right. All right. Finally, Carrie, we'll get you out of here on this. You are a prominent African-American woman in sports television. Maybe you made the argument you and Jamel are the two most prominent right now in terms of who we see every day. How there are a lot of young people who listen to this podcast, so I wanted to ask you, how often do young women of color reach out to you regularly about job advice, how to break into the business? And do you, even though you're still a young woman, but do you see yourself in terms of being somebody that younger women, especially younger women of color, can reach out to, because there are just not many black women on television, in sports television, I should say, with your kind of prominence or, you know, at a network as big as ESPN?
Yeah, no, Bridget, that's what I'm here. Like, I'm so glad you asked me that question. I get it every day. I get emails, I get DMs, they're private messages. Someone walked up to me and said, my daughter, she wants to meet you because she wants to do this. Young journalists coming up often ask me for advice. And I love giving it, because when I was coming up, there was no one in my neighborhood that I could reach out and say, or just within my network that I could reach out and say, hey, can you help me figure this out? I want to be on TV and I want to do well. So I created something, called Brown Girls Dream. And it's not just for black women, but it's women of all color, but specifically for the underserved and the underrepresented. And it's a mentor project where I've grabbed some of the best in the business that are in sports, that are in entertainment, that are reporters, that are in front of the camera, and some that are behind the scenes. And the point of this collective group of women, awesome ass women, is to be mentors to these young girls who need help and who need guidance and who need a blueprint and who need advice, because that just simply didn't exist. And Jamel and I, for example, had to figure it out as we go along. So during her situation, it's unheard of what she went through, right? But it would have been nice to have someone who went through that and said, hey, let me tell you what you do. This is the next move you make, or this is how you handle this, or this is how you maneuver that. So before she got the six, it would have been nice for her to actually be able to call someone who had a position similar and say, what do you think about this? How should I go in here with this? How should I negotiate and handle that? Well, yeah, she has mentors, but some of these things, we're trailblazing and we're figuring it out as we go along. And the more and more I'm in this business, I just realize that's the point. That's the purpose. It's not to sit up here and have an opinion. It's really to be a mentor, to give back, to hold the door open for the next young lady who wants to be a SportsCenter anchor, or who wants to figure out how to have a podcast and have a voice and be heard, or wants to be relevant in a way that helps change the way people view you or view us as women. So that's what I'm working on right now. That's my biggest love. So I've got about 20 women all involved in the process, and it's literally one-on-one mentor time with some of the greatest women ever that have ever done it, and it is the point. It is the purpose. I live for that.
That's great. Continued success with that. That is obviously going to be one of the things that you do heading forward that's going to be most important to you. That's really cool.
I'm excited about it.
All right. Carrie Champion, a couple of years ago, escaped from Shawshank State Penitentiary, where she is now a Sports Center anchor, the host of her own podcast, Be Honest, and the interviewer of Rolling with Champion, which obviously became national news with the LeBron James and Kevin Durant's comments. Carrie, this has been a long time in the making. I have immense respect for you. I've always enjoyed our interactions, and I wish you nothing but the best heading forward at ESPN and beyond. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you for having me, and Tupac for life, okay?
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Carrie Champion, Lou Pellegrino, joining me here. That was great. Whenever I dealt with her at ESPN, she's a very honest person, and I joke about the Shawshank stuff, but there was some truth behind that. And this was somebody I knew who, if she ever got her own forum, was going to be doing and saying interesting things. So I'm glad that she's out of First Take and now can do stuff. And look at you with the knowledge of the beeper generation.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was the big thing. When everybody, before cell phones, there were these little boxes that you would put a AA battery in. And what would happen? It would buzz or beep. Beeper, pager, when someone would try to contact you. So you would run to a payphone. Yes, that's something where you actually put a quarter in a slot and you dial and you talk to somebody. Right. It's so funny when you see like the phone booths on the street.
It's amazing because we both live in New York. Do you remember growing up how many phone booths
were?
And now today it's
there used to be packs of them.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It reminds me of the scene in the movie Airplane when all the news reporters run out and they all run into the phone booth
and
it falls over.
Right.
Right. But there are no, I mean, I don't even know if there's a bank of phones anymore in airports. I haven't even looked.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, essentially you can't really find that many payphones now in New York City, which is crazy.
But her interview, we've had a lot of people, you've had a lot of people on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, but I was so riveted by her interview because she's real.
Yeah, she's great.
Not that anybody who's been on here has been fake, but she's besides yourself, but she's talking about some really important issues that are going on right now, and I don't care what your political lines are, I really don't care, but she's talking about real stuff, and I give LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Carrie a lot of credit for doing what they did, putting it out there, and letting everyone see that these athletes do think about other things besides cashing checks, playing sports, and endorsements. I mean, it's what you can't have it both ways. You can't have it where, oh, athletes should get involved. Kobe never said anything when he was playing. And then when they say something, oh, why don't you stick to sports? It's that culture of like, come on. People are allowed to have opinions. Not every opinion is the right opinion. Not every opinion is the great opinion. But you know what? You're still allowed to have them.
Our thanks to Carrie Champion for an excellent interview. I'll go down the list. The last podcast before this was a Sports Media Roundtable with John Orand and AJ Perez.
Down to Orand.
Yeah, talked about the Olympic.
I'm kidding, John.
Talk about the Olympic coverage and how NBC feels about that. The NHL players not being there and Fox getting the NFL draft. Prior to that, we had John Abrams, who's a Bleacher Report writer, but the author of an amazing new book on The Wire, All the Pieces Matter, the inside story of The Wire. And then you go back to the archives and just check out the interviews with Jim Nantz, Katie Nolan, Jamel Hill, Mike Francesa, Tara Lipinski, and Johnny Weir, Gino Auriemma, and the list goes on. My thanks to Cadence 13. Thank you to Lou Pellegrino for producing this podcast. Thank you to Sports Illustrated, and thanks to Carrie Champion. Please check out the podcast on Google Play and Stitcher and Apple Podcast, and leave a review if you like this stuff. For Lou Pellegrino, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.